This is the truth. After that, I never once wanted to go back to that aquarium, not even when fourth grade went there on a field trip. Mom never knew it, but I faked a stomach ache that day. Excuse me, are you okay? The woman behind the register narrowed her eyes as she peered at me. I must have looked kind of spaced out. No, I don't think so, I mumbled, turning to walk out and forgetting all about the batteries. After we got home that day, it started raining again. It rained practically the entire spring vacation. During that break, I worked on a term paper for English and hoped that JT or Digger would call. They didn't. At the end of the week, Carl asked me to go with him while he took his mother, my Aunt Tracy, who doesn't drive, down to Richmond so she could stay for a few days and help her dad move into a nursing home. Even though we're cousins, I had never met Carl's other grandfather before. He's real old now and has that disease where you forget. He didn't even know Carl or my aunt when we walked in. It's me, Tracy, my aunt told him. Your daughter, she said, opening her arms for a hug. But Carl's grandfather didn't recognize her and even backed away, knocking a chair over. For hours, we packed up boxes for Carl's grandfather. All his sweaters and socks and towels, even his silverware and coffee mugs. Carl's grandfather watched game shows on television the whole time, except when he occasionally got up to tell us we needed to hurry because he was late for work. Afterward, we ordered some Chinese food and spent the night, Aunt Tracy in the guest room, Carl on the couch, and me on a funky futon thing his grandfather had. The next morning, other relatives were coming to help. Carl had to get back for his shift, though, so he and I got up early and left. We drove through a Burger King for breakfast, then got right back on Route 301 and drove north. I feel sorry for your mom, I told Carl. It's going to be a hard week for her. Yeah, but you know Mom, Brady. She wouldn't be happy if she wasn't helping someone. True, I thought. My Aunt Tracy had a heart of gold. And if you ask me, so did Carl, the way he was always helping her and us. It started me thinking that maybe there was more I could be doing. Like for the D'Angelos. By the time we got back from Richmond, it had stopped raining, and even though we'd only been gone for a day, it seemed as if spring had suddenly moved into Maryland. Clusters of daffodils and pudgy little purple hyacinths had sprouted up all over our yard. The ground was squishy from water, and behind the house, where Mom had started raking out her butterfly garden, the earthy scent of marsh drifted up from the river. That evening, Mom fried a rockfish and served one of her applesauce cakes for dessert. It was a nice dinner. You could tell we were all trying to make a fresh start and get things back to normal. Anything happen while I was gone? I asked, digging into my cake. Well, let's see. Dad scratched his head. The locusts are in bloom, so that means the crabs is having their first molt. See, too, that Mr. Hennessy down the road planted his soybean field. Mom smiled and lifted her eyebrows. Uncle Henry brought me a bag of manure for the garden. I snorted. Okay, what I meant is, did anything exciting happen? Mom and Dad looked at each other. Like, did anyone call? I prodded. Yes, Mom replied. Your Aunt Janet called from Rhode Island. She wants you to go up and spend a week with them when school gets out. I knew they'd contrive the trip to get my mind off things. I half-smiled. Anyone else? Slowly, Mom shook her head. No, I don't think so. Neither JT nor Digger had called then. I felt my heart dip. The whole week had passed and neither one of them had called. It rained the entire time you were gone, Mom reminded me. Like maybe that was an excuse. But on rainy days, the three of us had some of our best times down in JT's basement. His family had one of those big screen TVs and an air hockey table, too. I cut a big forkful of cake and pushed it into my mouth with a lot of resolve behind it. Good friends wouldn't ignore me like this, I thought. I wasn't going to let those guys get to me. And in the meantime, I'd show Ben's family just how sorry I was about what had happened. After I swallowed, I announced, I'm going to offer my help to the D'Angelos. My parents seemed surprised. Dad shrugged. Great idea, he said.
What kind of help?
Mom wanted to know.
Anything. Rake the yard, mow the lawn, whatever they need.
Mom appeared thoughtful as she stirred her tea.
I heard from someone at the grocery store that Gina, Mrs. D'Angelo, is over there by herself, she said. I'm sure she'd appreciate your offer.
What do you mean, Mrs. D'Angelo is over there by herself? Where's Mr. D'Angelo? I asked.
Mom kept stirring her tea. They have an apartment in Northern Virginia. Maybe he's staying there.
I stopped eating.
I don't get it. Why would she be there alone?
It was getting a little tense in our dining room. I looked from Mom to Dad and back to Mom again.
She set her spoon down on her saucer. Sometimes, she said gingerly, when there's been a death, it drives a family apart instead of together.
At first, that didn't make a lick of sense to me.
You'd think people would hold tight after a tragedy like the one with Ben. But then I only had to think back on what happened to my sister and watch Mom bite her lip to realize it didn't always work that way.
My father got up and left. This was way past his comfort level.
Mom reached over to touch my hand. They need some time, Brady. And maybe what they need right now is time apart.
After I heard Mrs. D'Angelo was over there alone, I was more determined than ever to help her. So the next day, Sunday, I asked Mom for her help, and we made a spinach lasagna and put the ingredients for a spicy Italian bread into the bread machine. I didn't mind the cooking. I felt as though I was an old hand in the kitchen ever since those days at the fire station. Even so, I made one heck of a mess, spilling flour all over the place, including on Tilly, because she was right under my feet the whole time. As soon as the bread machine beeped, I pulled the loaf out, wrapped it in tinfoil, and put it in a cardboard box with the tray of lasagna. Mom had also picked a thick bunch of daffodils, which she put in a coffee can with water and nestled into a corner of the box. On top, I settled a folded note offering my help. I signed my name and left a phone number and an email address. Mom had done so much of the work, I wanted her to come too. But at the last minute she said she couldn't, and Dad took me. The box was warm on my lap. I was proud of what Mom and I had created. Halfway up the D'Angelo's driveway, though, I had a terrible thought. What if Mrs. D'Angelo didn't want visitors? And me in particular? What if she closed the door in my face? What if she didn't know how hard I tried to save Ben? The D'Angelo's driveway is pretty long, winding across the field where JT, Digger, and I used to shoot tin cans, so there was a lot of time for me to agonize over this. When the D'Angelo's huge brick house came into view, Dad slowed his pickup and parked behind a new black Saab. The D'Angelo's had four cars, including a silver Porsche that JT lusted after. I didn't see the Porsche, though. Maybe Mr. D'Angelo had it, over at that apartment in Virginia. We rang the doorbell a few times and waited at least 10 minutes, but no one ever came. Disappointed, we set the box by the door and left. Dad didn't say anything on the drive back home. Not that it's unusual for Dad to be quiet, but I could tell something was eating at him. When we walked into the kitchen where Mom was unloading the dishwasher, he finally told me. "Look, Brady," he began, "I know it's been hard, but it's time to be getting on. I got way too much to do to take on your chores, too." Mom held a stack of plates. The room grew quiet. "Either do something with those crab pots tomorrow, or pull them in," Dad said. I hadn't thought a lick about crabbing. Not a lick. Even if I didn't rebait them, I knew I needed to move the pots around. If you don't, sometimes on Dad's boat we even hose them off, they'll gunk up and disintegrate. Dad turned the cap in his hands. "One other thing," he went on. "I know you kids must have been in my shop sometime over the past few weeks and took my drill. The cordless one? The one runs on batteries? I can't find it anywhere, and I need it."
"We didn't take it, Dad. I know we didn't," I insisted, hurt because I'm good about putting things back, especially if it was something from his shop. My father let out his breath like he didn't believe me. Then he set his cap and truck keys on the counter and left. Mom could tell Dad had hurt my feelings. In a soft voice, she explained how he'd been under some pressure lately to join the other watermen in a protest against the state's new crabbing regulations. "They're talking about petitioning the governor and demonstrating over in Annapolis," she said.
"And Dad doesn't want to do it?"
She made a face and shrugged. "He's been kind of funny about it, like he's not sure. But I don't see how he can't go along with the others. It's his livelihood, Brady. It's what puts food on this table." I stood staring down the hallway after my dad. I hated to let my father down. Hated it. Especially if he was having problems of his own. So I set my alarm for 4 a.m. in order to check my crab pots before school, then laid out my clothes for the morning. I even made 2 peanut butter and honey sandwiches and left them in the refrigerator beside a bottle of Gatorade so I could grab them on my way out the door. It was brutal when that buzzer went off. I moaned and pushed the warm covers off. On automatic pilot, I got dressed and let Tilly out. Then I shoved the sandwiches in my coat pocket, grabbed the Gatorade, and scooped up the flashlight at the end of the counter. The house was silent. Monday was Dad's day to work in the shop, so he and Mom wouldn't be up for another 2 hours. Outside the tool shed, I picked up a basket to fill with razor clams from the refrigerator. But even before I opened the door to fetch the bait, I could feel how something had shut down inside of me. With the empty basket still in my hand, I walked along the short path to the dock. By then my eyes had adjusted to the dark. I flicked the flashlight off and stood there, staring out over the creek. Tilly had hopped into my boat and was waiting. But I knew I couldn't go back out on the water. Not because I was afraid or because I blamed the river for what happened. It was because of an overwhelming sadness that came over me being near the water. In the hazy morning air, all I could see was a red kayak, sunk in the river, and Ben's half-closed eyes and cold blue lips. Whatever it was inside of me that had shut down, curled inward. In the kitchen, I left a note for Dad saying my engine was broke, and went back to bed. Tilly seemed to understand and lay quietly on the rug beside me. Later that day, when I got home from school, Dad told me 2 terrapins had drowned in my pots. I wondered how he knew. But walking out back, I could see that my father had pulled every one of my traps and stacked them up, 4 deep, behind the shed. Chapter 12. I sometimes wonder what would have happened if Mrs. D'Angelo hadn't sent me that email the next day. Because I was on a downward spiral, no question. And that email changed everything.
Brady, I'm sorry I didn't thank you earlier for the lasagna and the flowers. I appreciated it so much. It's been difficult, and I never even thanked you for what you did. It is so generous of you to offer to help. I do need someone to help with the yard. Would you like a summer job? Gina D'Angelo.
It was never my intention to get a summer job out of Mrs. D'Angelo, but I went over on Saturday to talk about it. Mom dropped me off. She'd made some cranberry orange muffins that morning, so I brought a paper plate with 6 of them covered in plastic wrap. When I rang the doorbell and watched my mother drive off, I didn't even think about being on that porch a few days ago with the lasagna dinner. Instead, I stood there recalling the very first time we'd come as a family, the new neighbors, to the D'Angelo's for dinner. This would have been during the holiday, 5 months earlier, because I remembered the porch banisters all decorated with pine boughs and an enormous, sweet-smelling bayberry wreath that hung on the front door. Dad hadn't been too keen on the dinner idea, because for starters, he's suspicious of all these rich new people moving onto the shore, buying up our farmland, rip-wrapping the waterfront, and building their mansions with 3-car garages. Plus, he hates getting fancy. He'd kept muttering, "I'm not even gonna know which darn fork to use." But Dad didn't have any trouble with his forks that night, and he had everybody hooked and laughing at his stories about the good old days. Mr. D'Angelo didn't believe Dad when he told him the underwater grasses were so thick when Dad was a boy that he once dragged a box spring through the creek to clear a channel for his boat. And Mrs. D'Angelo seemed delighted with all of us as she swung her head back and forth, talking to Mom and me across the table, and tending to Ben, who sat beside her in his booster seat, smashing peas and potatoes in his face and making one heck of a mess. Mom was pretty that night, with her sparkly earrings and her long, sandy-colored hair twisted up on her head. We kept catching each other's eye, chuckling over the things Ben said, such as, "This coward is a torpedo. Watch!" as he made the vegetable plow a path through the gravy on his plate before targeting his mouth. After dessert, after I'd picked up every morsel of that delicious key lime pie with my fork tines, I said to Ben, "Hey, how about showing me that new hamster you got for Christmas?" "Oh, Ben, did you hear that? Brady wants to see Tiny Tim," Mrs. D'Angelo exclaimed. I could tell she was very appreciative. While she lifted Ben out of his booster seat, Mr. D'Angelo poured more wine for the adults, and I caught a grateful look from my parents as well. Ben's hamster was cute and had an incredible setup with a big cage and all kinds of connecting plastic tubes and hideouts. Plus, he had an exercise wheel and a glow ball he could run inside. "You gotta be kidding me," I said when Ben explained how the glow ball rolled around on the floor. Fearless, Ben scooped up the hamster with one hand, plopped him inside that ball, and snapped the little door closed. Then he ran to the light switch and turned out the lights so he could sit cross-legged on Ben's bed that looked like a race car and watch the ball glow and roll around the bedroom floor. It was surreal, but I'll tell you, I about died laughing. I had time to think back on all this because it was taking Mrs. D'Angelo an age to answer the door. Suddenly, though, I heard footsteps and the sound of the lock being turned from the inside. "Brady," Mrs. D'Angelo said, opening the door. I hoped it wasn't rude the way I dropped my mouth, but I almost didn't recognize her, she looked so bad. Like a bedraggled ghost, you could say. Her skin was pale as chalk and her eyes puffy with big dark bags underneath. Even her hair, usually so thick and curly, was pulled back severely, held at the nape of her neck with a cloth scrunchie like a lot of the girls wear at school. "Come in," she said, stepping back. I brushed off my baseball cap as I entered. She smiled a little when she took the muffins. Since she was dressed in sweatpants and an oversized flannel shirt, I thought maybe we'd go straight to the yard to start working, but she led me through the house to the kitchen. The D'Angelo's kitchen is twice the size of our living room, with its own fireplace and glass doors that open onto a patio. There's a spectacular view overlooking the creek. I glanced at it. You can't help it, but mostly I was keeping an eye on Mrs. D'Angelo, hoping she wouldn't get too sad or anything. "I do want to thank you," she said. I knew she didn't mean the muffins. "It was no trouble," I replied, immediately thinking how stupid that sounded. "I mean that I did my best, Mrs. D'Angelo." "I'm sure you did, Brady." She sat and looked out the window. Unzipping my jacket, I sat down too. But it was awkward. I didn't feel as though I had said enough, or the right thing. You could feel her sorrow. It filled every molecule of air in that room. But man, I did not know what to say. Somehow we laid out a plan for me coming over to take care of the yard. And even though I told her I just wanted to help, she insisted on paying me. And I agreed. I agreed with everything because I didn't want to argue with her. That afternoon I began work by cutting the lawn, which took me about 4 hours with their riding lawnmower. When I was finished, Mrs. D'Angelo fed me lunch, a sandwich, chips, and lemonade, on her patio. Then she asked if I would take Ben's hamster. "Take him? You mean keep him?" I asked. She nodded quickly, and I could see her eyes filling up. "Sure, oh, it's fine," I assured her, realizing how Tiny Tim must be a constant reminder of Ben. "I'll take him right now if you want." We strode silently, the two of us, through the house to Ben's room upstairs. The door was closed and we stopped outside of it.
I can't go in, Brady. But here.
She thrust some money into my hands.
For food and things that he needs.
I looked at the money, a thick wad of folded bills.
Please,
she repeated.
I'll get my car and meet you out front, okay?
She turned and moved quickly down the stairs. I heard her clogs clomp across the marble foyer, then the front door open and close. Only then did I stuff the money in my pocket and turn the doorknob to enter Ben's room. It was just as I remembered it from when I babysat several weeks ago. There were Legos all over the place, including part of the castle we'd built. A wooden train was set up. The car bed was neatly made, with a stuffed dinosaur leaning against a pillow, which was in the shape of a tire. Pajamas were laid out on the bed, and a pair of fuzzy duck slippers sat waiting on the floor. I felt extremely sad being in that room. I could understand why Mrs. D'Angelo didn't want to go in. The hamster was beginning to smell, too. Only then did I wonder what my mother was going to say when I walked in with a hamster. A rodent. At home, I set the hamster cage on a newspaper-covered card table in my room. Tilly was delighted to have Tiny Tim with us, and Mom didn't care, it turned out. "Just keep it clean," she warned. But the first night, the hamster made so much noise running around in his wheel that I had to move him down to the basement. How could Ben stand all that racket, I wondered. As it was, I still had trouble sleeping. I threw myself into working for Mrs. D'Angelo. After school, Saturdays, sometimes when I arrived on the weekend, she wasn't even out of bed. She hid a key in the garage so I could get into the house to use the bathroom or get a drink, and one morning, when I let myself in, I heard her upstairs throwing up. I worried she was making herself sick from being so depressed and so alone. Her mother, her sister, a friend, they'd all come and gone. But I was afraid to talk to her, and so just kept myself busy. And boy, there was plenty to do at the D'Angelo's place. Every other week I mowed the lawn and trimmed, which took all day. Then I mulched the gardens, weeded, planted, and watered everything. She had a whole truckload of stuff delivered. Impatiens, marigolds, geraniums, miniature roses. She showed me where she wanted everything planted, and the day she stood there, pointing around at her garden, was the first time she seemed just a little bit better. I guess I got caught up in the moment. "You get a lot of sun here. You ought to plant yourself a butterfly garden, like my mom," I suggested. "A butterfly garden," she repeated like it was a real enchanting idea. She crossed her arms, thinking, while I dug a hole for one of the rose bushes. "We get a lot of butterflies," I said, angling the shovel.
"There are certain plants, then, that they like?"
"Oh, are you kidding?" I had to stop for a second to expound a little, because I knew a lot about butterflies. "First off, they don't like red. They like yellow and purple, and blue the best."
"Really?"
"Clusters, too," I said, encouraged by her interest. "You know, as opposed to like a single plant. And they need some flat rocks, so they can warm up before they take off. Plus a low-lying source of water. You could put in a lily pad pond, or just a bird bath if you didn't want to go to the trouble." She glanced around the yard.
"How about by the pool?"
"Perfect. Any place that gets a lot of sun." I grinned and went back to digging.
"How long has your mom had a butterfly garden?" she asked.
I had to stop and think. 6 years, I replied, dumping the earth beside the hole. "Ever since my sister died." Boy, I knew the instant I said it that I shouldn't have, because it would make her think of Ben. And there I was, digging holes. Warily, I looked up. Mrs. D'Angelo looked startled.
"You lost a sister, Brady?"
"Yeah," I acknowledged with a sigh, "when she was 5 months old." She put a hand up on her chest.
"It's okay now,"
I rushed to assure her, even though it wasn't really true.
"I mean that it was a long time ago, and the butterfly garden has helped."
Her wide, mournful eyes had settled on me, and I can tell they weren't going anywhere until I explained that a little better.
Mom, my mom, she believes that butterflies are like little spirits. Who knows, maybe even my sisters, I said, shrugging because I'd never been sure about that.
Mrs. D'Angelo nodded.
Would you excuse me, Brady?
She said before rushing off. I kicked the shovel because I knew I'd stirred things up. I wondered if she'd want me back after that. But she did. She even started asking me what I liked for sandwiches and drinks, and at noon she'd sit down with me to chit-chat for a few minutes while I ate. One day we talked about butterflies again, and I told her about butterfly eyes. They can look forward and backward at the same time, I said. It's true because they have hundreds of separate lenses. It's like looking out from a bowl, a fisheye, panoramic view of the world. Her dark eyes sparkled. You don't believe me? Try sneaking up on a butterfly, I challenged her.
Oh, I believe you.
I have to say, it was terrific to see her smile again, even if she did still look pretty run down. Digger was still being a total jerk, avoiding me. But JT started talking to me in school. We need to get together, he kept saying. But neither one of us picked up the phone. I was busy, and I figured he was too, working his butt off on that chicken farm after school. Plus we had final exams coming up. It's funny. Even though I came home exhausted every day that I worked for Mrs. D'Angelo, I was getting some of my old energy back. Evenings I threw the ball for Tilly, helped Dad repair some of his broken crab pots, and even offered to help my mother with the dishes one night when it wasn't my turn. Mrs. D'Angelo was curious about your garden, I told Mom as I plunged my hands into the soapy water. My mother was putting leftovers away.
She is?
Yeah, she's been reading up on it. Just today she asked about your foundation shrubs. So I told her about the butterfly bush and that smaller one, the purple one.
Lavender, Mom gently reminded me as she snapped the lid on a bowl of leftover coleslaw.
Lots of different shrubs would work, though. Azaleas, rhododendrons, spice bush, a wisteria vine.
Mom, I told her about the butterfly bush and the lavender because they get a lot of butterflies. I didn't know all the other names.
You do, though. Maybe you could go over one day and give her some advice.
Me?
Mom put the bowl in the refrigerator and stood, closing the door with her back to me.
Yeah, you, Mom. It might be nice. I mean, no one ever goes to see her. A couple of people from her church now and then, but they don't stay long.
I rinsed the pot and set it in the dish drainer.
She turned around. Marcellus hasn't come back?
No. She even told me one day he blames her for what happened. Mom winced.
She did?
Yeah, I guess she wanted me to know why he wasn't there. I feel sorry for her because she's so alone. She spends the first half of the day in bed, then she just sort of goes through the motions the rest of the day.
Mom retrieved the basket from the table and put the leftover rolls in a Ziploc bag.
The poor thing. She must be so depressed.
I don't know about depressed, I said, scrubbing hard on a blackened skillet. But she sure is sick a lot. Almost every morning she throws up.
Brady!
Mom swung around to look at me.
What? Is Mrs. D'Angelo pregnant?
I stopped scrubbing. How would I know? Mom's eyes flitted sideways. She ran a hand back through her hair.
I'm sorry, of course you wouldn't know. But those are pretty classic symptoms. You know, morning nausea, fatigue.
I didn't say anything. Just went back to cleaning that skillet.
Well, is there something you can do for her? Mom persisted.
That's what got me. I stopped scrubbing and turned around to confront my mother.
I don't know what more I can do, but you know what? Maybe you could try to help her too.
I mean, gee whiz. You're a mother. You lost a kid. You have things to say to her that I can't.
Never had I spoken to my mother like that before. Never. I let my breath out and stared at the faucets, then rested my wrists on the edge of the sink, bracing myself for Mom's angry reaction. But it never came. You're right, Mom said quietly.
She wiped her hands on a dish towel.
I should go see her.
She untied her apron, folded it, and set it on the counter.
I should go see her right now.
And I watched her go, across the kitchen and out the door. I don't know what Mom said, but I do know this. A few days later, Mrs. D'Angelo had one fine butterfly garden out there by her pool. I know, because I planted it. She had a butterfly bush and yellow sunflowers, cosmos, daisies, daylilies, two birdbaths full of water. I even planted some milkweed, violets, and wispy saltgrass for the caterpillars. You know, when butterflies are in the larval stage. Then I bordered all of it with dozens of miniature marigolds. Not that I was keeping track, but it had been 6 weeks since Ben died, and I was beginning to feel things shift just a little for the better. At the end of May, the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend, I planned on working a few hours for Mrs. D'Angelo. Then I was going to knock off early and go to a picnic at my Uncle Henry's. Get this, I was even thinking of asking JT to come with us. Memorial Day weekend. I'll never forget it. Because just when things started to come back together, they came undone in a big way. Chapter 13. It was a hot day that Saturday. I had mowed the lawn the weekend before, so Mrs. D'Angelo said she had something else for me to do.
Down at the dock, she said, there's a lovely old boathouse that we've never cleaned out.
She didn't realize that I knew the old boathouse like the back of my hand. When Digger's grandfather owned the property, J.T., Digger, and I played pirates in that boathouse and used our dinghy for the pirate ship.
I wondered if you could get things into some kind of order, Mrs. D'Angelo said. Pull everything out, sort it. If there's anything salvageable, put it aside. Make a pile for the dump, then just rake up around there. It's such a mess.
Sure, I replied.
Another thing, she said. I'll be away for a couple of days.
You will? I was surprised.
Yes, she started to smile. Thanks to your mother. She's the one who talked a little sense into me. I'm going into Washington. My husband and I have been talking. We need to figure out what we're going to do. I was confused. What I mean, she explained, is that there is another baby on the way and we need to prepare for that.
A baby? I was stunned.
She dropped her eyes. We'll never get over what happened, Brady. Never.
Looking up at me, she added,
but life does go on.
I must have stood there with my mouth hanging open, because Mrs. D'Angelo slowly grinned at my reaction.
Your mother knows about the baby. Now you do, too.
Wow! I mean, congratulations, I stammered. Truly, I was happy for her. That's really good news.
Yes, she glanced around her. Well, anyway, Brady, would you mind just coming over and checking on things while I'm gone?
Not at all.
You could turn the sprinkler on one evening, maybe, and take the mail and newspapers in. I'll be away until Tuesday.
No problem, I said, beaming. It's no problem at all.
She touched my arm. Thanks. You've been such a help to me.
I took a rake and a couple big garbage bags and headed on down the hill behind the 3-car garage to the dock. The D'Angelo's sailboat bobbed nearby in its slip, and their powerboat sat gleaming on a boat lift beside it. On shore was a dark green canoe flipped over, and off toward some bushes were two wooden sawhorses a few feet apart. The sawhorses were where Mr. D'Angelo had rested the red kayak when it was out of the water. Opening the door to the boathouse, I stepped inside. Besides a lot of dust, a bunch of old memories drifted around me. Not just the pirate games we used to play, but the morning JT cut his knee on a piece of broken glass and had to get stitches, and the time Digger ran away from home and made a bed for himself on a bunch of empty grain sacks in one corner. I had to shake my head, remembering how we all brought him food, sandwiches and cookies and stuff, but his sojourn didn't last much beyond dinner time. When bats started flying around at dusk, he got scared and went on home.
Peering inside a wooden barrel full of baling twine, I recalled the rope ladders we used to make for our pirate getaways, and how one time the flimsy twine ladder broke, sending me into the water with a big splash, while JT and Digger howled from the dock above. Whew! I needed to plow through the nostalgia and get to work. But where to start? Junk in that boathouse was piled 10 feet high. Old wicker lawn furniture, tattered fruit baskets, a large, cracked headboard. Overwhelmed, I decided to clean around the outside first. Grabbing the rake, I began pulling debris away from the sides of the boathouse. Dried up leaves, piles of brush, big pieces of plastic from a kid's old swimming pool. It wasn't going to be fun or easy, I concluded pretty quickly. But I gritted my teeth and went at it so I could knock off and go home early.
Goodbye, Brady,
Mrs. D'Angelo called out from the hill. She had sunglasses on, her hair up in a little bun, a tote bag in her hand. I waved back. Have a good trip. After she left, I went clear down one side of the boathouse, raking, making piles, and periodically stuffing the junk into one of the two black leaf bags. Already sweat was trickling down my face and neck. My hands were slick inside the heavy work gloves I wore. I tore them off so my hands could breathe for a while, tossed the gloves on a nearby tree stump, and took a long drink of ice water from the plastic jug I'd brought with me. Out of the blue, I smiled. Truth was, I was pretty happy about the baby. I knew it wouldn't replace Ben, but it had to help. I started whistling a song I liked from the radio as I went back to work. It was when I turned the corner on the boathouse and pulled the rake through a tangle of prickers that I saw something reflect the sun. At first I thought it might be a knife, some kind of a silver knife. I stopped whistling. But when I reached over to pull it out of the weeds, I saw it wasn't a knife at all. It was a drill. My father's cordless drill. The one he said was missing a while back. I held it and let the rake fall, because I could see that there were flecks of red paint on the drill bit. I swallowed hard. Flecks of red that looked as though they might even be the same color as the red kayak. Was it possible? Instinctively, I looked around to see if someone might be watching me. My heart started pounding. Did someone drill holes in the kayak to make it sink? Was it Marcellus? Is that why he had disappeared? No, I decided pretty quickly. Because if Marcellus did it, why would he use one of my father's tools? In a sort of daze, but still holding the drill, I stumbled back to the front of the boathouse and sat down on the wooden steps leading up to the door. As I did, my mind raced backward almost an entire year to when the D'Angelos first bought the property from Digger's grandfather. They had just begun construction on the house, but they had left a canoe on shore and their sailboat at the dock. It was early evening that summer day last year. We three, JT, Digger, and I, had come over to the beach beneath the bluff for a swim. It was the D'Angelos' property, yes, but only the week before, it had belonged to Digger's grandfather, and many times we had come to swim in the little cove to cool off. The water was shallow, and the way the beach curved made it private, too. Digger was down in the dumps that day about his grandfather having to let go of the place, and we could see how it was eating him up. He wouldn't even come in the water with us, but sat on the beach stewing, while JT and I swam around, splashing and dunking each other. We felt sorry for Digger, though. A little sorry for ourselves, too, I guess, because it meant the end of swimming over there. After coming up on shore, we dried off with the towels we'd brought and aimed a few small rocks toward the D'Angelo's sailboat. One of the stones Digger threw pinged off the metal mast. Bastards, he had cried. Hey, I've got an idea, I'd told him, tossing a glance at the sailboat. Let's get my father's drill and put a few holes in her hull. Cool, JT had exclaimed. Then when they come for a little day sail, they'll realize they aren't going anywhere. Digger had looked at me, but he wasn't laughing. No, that's stupid. The sailboat would just sink. It's got to be something worse than that. Okay, I'd said. Then we can put holes in that canoe instead.
What you do is you fill the holes back in with this water-based glue my dad has in the workshop, mixed in with some of the residue from what you drilled out, so no one can tell. Maybe dab over it with a marker, a green marker. Then after he's out on the water about 30 minutes, the glue gives way, the water comes in, and he goes swimming. Digger had stared past me with an intense look on his face. Ouch, I'd cried, because JT had suddenly whipped me across the back of my legs with his towel. Grabbing my own towel, I had sprinted after him down the beach. As I sat on the steps of the boathouse, remembering, goosebumps popped up on my arms and an awful scenario washed over me like a sudden chill, weakening my muscles and nearly taking my breath away. My God, I uttered, staring with horror at the drill in my hands. Did Digger have something to do with sinking the kayak? Chapter 14. What was I going to do? In those first paralyzing moments, I didn't have a clue, just an increasingly sick feeling in my stomach. Finally, I pushed myself up. I stood and wrapped the drill inside the second unused leaf bag. The bag was way too big, but I just kept wrapping the drill around and around in it. I carried it back up the hill to where I parked my bicycle in the shade by the side of the garage. I put the bag-wrapped drill in my backpack and got on my bike. I had to tell someone. But who? Not my parents. Not yet, anyway. JT, I figured. I would tell JT. Then, together, we could figure out what to do. All the way down the D'Angelo's long driveway, I pedaled faster and faster as they put more and more of it together. How angry Digger had been at the D'Angelo's for buying his grandfather's farm. How he had spit out, "Pedal hard, you sucker," when he saw the red kayak that morning. When I hit the paved road, I leaned into the turn so hard, I almost spun the bike out of control. You'd have thought I was rushing to report a fire the way I sped down the road. At JT's driveway, I put on my brakes, then pedaled hard up the long dirt road to his house. I thought about taking the drill and showing him right off, but then decided not to and left it in my backpack with my bike. My heart was pounding like crazy, and I was out of breath as I climbed the wide front steps and stood on his porch, knocking on the door. It was pretty scary to think that one of my friends might have had something to do with Ben dying, and I was beginning to wonder what would happen to Digger if it turned out to be true. Kate opened the door and caught me off guard with her nice smile. "Hi, Brady." "Hey," I said, still breathing hard. The smell of something baking, something chocolate, wafted up behind her, and I spied JT's cute little sister, Carrie, peeking around the corner to see who had come. Kate's smile disappeared. She lowered her voice. "Guess you heard." "What?" I asked, confused, a little panicked. Did she know what I knew? Had I missed something? "My father's in the hospital," she said. "Carl came with the ambulance this morning and took him." No, I didn't know," I managed to say. "Your father?" Kate nodded. "He passed out at the breakfast table," she indicated with her thumb. "He's back awake now. They called from the hospital. We think it's his kidneys. Remember when he had that really bad attack a year ago?" I did remember. JT's father was in the hospital for almost a month. I even came over and helped JT with his chores after school. Kate's news blew some of the steam off my anger. "I'm sorry to hear about your dad," I said, but I wasn't forgetting why I had come. "Is JT here?" "He's culling down at the chicken houses," she said. "Wouldn't you know it, we had a huge shipment of new chicks yesterday." "Think it would be okay if I went to see him?" I asked. "Sure," Kate said, nodding eagerly. "He'd be glad to see you." "I'll go give him a hand then," I said. I went back down the steps and walked across their flat dirt yard, past several outbuildings and huge grain silos to the first of four long chicken houses. I hated going inside those things because they were so warm. That and the ammonia smell from the chicken waste was so strong, you could hardly breathe. But I was desperate to talk to JT. Inside the door to the first house, I peered down the narrow building.
but all I saw were thousands of yellow baby chicks peeping up a storm and crowding one another around the feeders. They were actually kind of cute at this stage, so small and fluffy. In a matter of days, though, they'd shed that pale yellow fuzz for tough new white feathers, and in just a few weeks the chicken people, Purdue or whoever, would be back to collect them. There were big electric fans droning in the windows to keep the birds cool, but it was just as hot as I remembered. I scoped out the chicken house as far as I could see, but I didn't spot my friend. Back outside, I took in deep breaths of fresh air and walked, my feet scuffing up dust, over to the next chicken house. Inside the door, I saw JT right away. Wearing a bright red t-shirt, he was about halfway down the building, walking slowly, the chicks parting and making a path as he moved. He had a pillowcase in one hand, and when he bent over occasionally, I knew he was picking out the dead chicks, or the ones that were hobbling around, getting ready to keel over. As I walked toward him, the chicks scattered at my feet, too. Their high-pitched peeping vibrated in my ears, and the soles of my shoes picked up layers of crappy chicken manure, but it was impossible to avoid. It wasn't until I was right behind JT that he finally noticed me. When he turned and our eyes met, I could see the pain he had bottled up inside. Because of his dad? The sweat dripping off his face could have been tears for all I knew. JT dropped his eyes. I looked away too, and when I did, I spotted a dead chick, its little feet twitching, and bent over to pick it up. "Here," I said, offering it to JT. He opened his pillowcase and placed it inside. "I've got to talk to you," I said loudly, so he could hear above the din. He nodded. "Let me finish this house," he replied just as loud. Together we waded through the ocean of yellow chicks, both of us stopping here and there to pick up the dead or dying ones, adding them to the bag. Outside we walked over to a compost bin, where JT dumped the contents of his pillowcase and made a body count, noting the number on a piece of paper. It was a lousy job, but twice a day someone at the farm had to do the culling. "So you heard about my dad?" JT asked. He wiped the sweat off his face with the back of one hand. "Sorry," I said. "How is he?" JT folded up the paper and pushed it into his jeans pocket. "I don't know. We're going to see him after we eat." "Look," I started, "I know this isn't a good time for you, JT, but I just discovered..." "You ever have surgery?" JT asked, cutting me off. "Surgery?" His question, and the bluntness of it, threw me. "Yeah, you ever been put to sleep?" Hesitating, I nevertheless answered. "Once," I said, wondering where this was going. "Remember when I tore the cartilage in my knee? During that basketball game back in sixth grade?" "Oh yeah," JT said, fidgeting with the pencil in his hand. "Anyway, I'm thinking I'll give my father one of my kidneys. If I'm compatible, that is. People at the hospital, they're gonna do a blood test on my mom and me." I stared at my feet, not sure how to respond, then peered back at JT. "JT, I'm sorry about your dad. Yeah, it's awful." "But you gotta listen to me, man," I continued firmly, the urgency returning, "because I need your help." There was a pause. JT was not making eye contact. Still fidgeting with that damn pencil, he asked in a small voice, "What is it?" "Over at the D'Angelo's, where I'm working now, I was down at the boathouse, raking up." Finally, JT looked at me. "And I found my father's drill." JT's eyes grew large. My heart jumped into my throat. "JT?" He didn't say anything, but he took a step backward, like I was going to hit him. Only something hit me instead. "Do you know something about this?" "JT? Did Digger drill holes in that kayak?" Barely, barely, I saw JT nod his head. I stared at him and a terrible expression consumed JT's face. "We didn't mean for Mrs. D'Angelo and Ben to get hurt," he blurted out. Holy shit, JT. You were in on this?
A screen door slammed and Kate called us.
Guys, where are you?
JT threw up both hands at me.
Please, Brady. They don't know. Please don't say anything in front of Kate. Why? I demanded, screwing up my face. Why'd you do it?
It was a horrible time for Kate to show up, but she did just then, innocently rounding the corner of the chicken house.
There you are, hey.
She put her hands on her hips and smiled.
Grandma wants to know if you'll stay for dinner, Brady. It's just BLTs and corn because we're going to the hospital after dinner to see Daddy. But you're welcome to stay.
JT and I glanced at each other.
I made brownies,
Kate chimed sweetly, trying to entice me to have dinner with them.
Sure, why don't you?
JT said in an uncertain voice. His hand, the one holding the pencil, was shaking.
I can't, I declared, angry beyond words at JT and Digger, and trying real hard not to show it. Some friends they were, I thought. I've got to go. In fact, I'm late already. Tell your grandmother I'm sorry, Kate.
I walked away, but when JT tried to stop me,
Hey, Brady!
I started running. When I got to my bike, JT was right behind me, breathing hard.
Don't go to Digger's, he told me, grabbing my arm. Don't go without me.
Why?
Because I want to be there, and I can't go right now.
I yanked my arm away.
I can't believe you guys did it.
Why?
What the hell were you thinking, JT?
It was a mistake, JT exclaimed.
You boys!
JT's grandmother waved her handkerchief and called to us from the front steps.
JT, can't you convince Braden to stay?
When JT looked back at his grandmother, I jumped on my bicycle and tore out of there. Straight.